doing as the book bids me. As I was speaking this to them and held up the Bible open in my hand to show them the place in the book where Christ forbids swearing, they plucked the book out of my hand, and the judge said, "Nay, but we will imprison George Fox." Yet this got abroad over all the country as a byword, that they gave me a book to swear on that commanded me not to swear at all, and that the Bible was at liberty, and I in prison for doing as the Bible said. Now when the judge still urged me to swear, I told him I had never taken oath, covenant, or engagement in my life, but my yea or nay was more binding to me than any oath was to many others. For had they not had experience how little men regarded an oath, and how they had sworn one way and then another, and how the justices in court had forsworn themselves now. I told him I was a man of tender conscience, and if they had any sense of a tender conscience, they would consider that it was in obedience to Christ's command that I could not swear. But, said I, if any of you can convince me that after Christ and the apostle had commanded not to swear, they altered that command and commanded Christians to swear, then ye shall see I will swear. There being many priests by, I said, if ye cannot do it, let your priests stand up and do it. But not one of the priests made any answer. Oh, said the judge, all the world cannot convince you. No, said I, how is it likely the world should convince me? For the whole world lies in wickedness. But bring out your spiritual men, as you call them, to convince me. Then both the sheriff and the judge said, the angel swore in the revelations. I replied, when God bringeth his first begotten Son into the world, he saith, let all the angels of God worship him. And he saith, swear not at all. Nay, said the judge, I will not dispute. Then I spoke to the jury, telling them it was for Christ's sake that I could not swear, and therefore I warned them not to act contrary to the witness of God in their consciences, for before his judgment seat they must all be brought. And I told them that as for plots and persecution for religion and popery, I do deny them in my heart, for I am a Christian, and shall show forth Christianity amongst you this day. It is for Christ's doctrine I stand. More words I had both with the judge and jury before the jailer took me away. In the afternoon I was brought up again and put among the thieves some time, where I stood with my hat on till the jailer took it off. Then the jury, having found this new indictment against me for not taking the oath, I was called to the bar, and the judge asked me what I would say for myself. I bade them read the indictment, for I would not answer to that which I did not hear. The clerk read it, and as he read, the judge said, take heed, it be not false again. But he read it in such a manner that I could hardly understand what he read. When he had done, the judge asked me what I said to the indictment. I told him that hearing but once so large a writing read, and at such a distance that I could not distinctly hear all the parts of it, I could not well tell what to say to it, but if he would let me have a copy and give me time to consider it, I would answer it. This put them to a little stand, but after a while the judge asked me, what time would you have it? I said, until the next assize. But, said he, what plea will you now make? Are you guilty or not guilty? I said, I am not guilty at all of obstinately and willfully refusing to swear. And as for those things mentioned in the oath, as Jesuitical plots and foreign powers, I utterly deny them in my heart. And if I could take any oath, I should take that. But I never took any oath in my life. The judge said, you speak well, but the king is sworn. The parliament is sworn. I am sworn. The justices are sworn. And the law is preserved by oaths. I told him that they had had sufficient experience of man's swearing, and he had seen how the justices and jury had sworn falsely the other day. And if he had read in the Book of Martyrs how many of the martyrs had refused to swear, both within the time of the 10 persecutions and in Bishop Bonner's days, he might see that to deny swearing in obedience to Christ's command was no new thing. He said he wished the laws were otherwise. I said, our yea is yea, and our nay is nay, and if we transgress our yea and our nay, let us suffer as they do, or should do, that swear falsely. This I told him we had offered to the king, and the king said it was reasonable. After some further discourse, they committed me to prison again, there to lie until the next assize. And Colonel Kirby gave order to the jailer to keep me close, and suffer no flesh alive to come at me. For I was not fit, he said, to be discoursed with by men. I was put into a tower where the smoke of the other prisoners came up so thick it stood as dew upon the walls, and sometimes it was so thick that I could hardly see the candle when it burned. And I, being locked under three locks, the under jailer, when the smoke was great, would hardly be persuaded to come up to unlock one of the uppermost doors for fear of the smoke, so that I was almost smothered. Besides, it rained in upon my bed, and many times when I went to stop out the rain in the cold winter season, my shirt was as wet as muck with the rain that came in upon me while I was laboring to stop it out. And the place being high and open to the wind, sometimes as fast as I stopped it, the wind blew it out again. In this manner I lay all that long cold winter till the next assize, in which time I was so starved and so frozen with cold and wet with the rain that my body was greatly swelled and my limbs much benumbed. The assize began the 16th of the month called March, 1664-5. The same judges, Twisden and Turner, coming that circuit again. Judge Twisden sat this time on the crown bench, and before him I was brought. I had informed myself of the errors in this indictment also, for though at the assize before Judge Turner said to the officers in court, pray see that all the oath be in the indictment, and that the word subject be in, and that the day of the month and year of the king be put in right, for it is a shame that so many errors should be seen and found in the face of the country. Yet many errors, and those great ones, were in this indictment as well as in the former. Surely the hand of the Lord was in it, to confound their mischievous work against me, and to blind them therein, insomuch that, although after the indictment was drawn at the former assize, the judge examined it himself, and tried it with the clerks, yet the word subject was left out of this indictment also. The day of the month was put in wrong, and several material words of the oath were left out. Yet they went on confidently against me, thinking all was safe and well. When I was brought to the bar and the jury called over to be sworn, the clerk asked me first whether I had any objection to make to any of the jury. I told him I knew none of them. Then, having sworn the jury, they swore three of the officers of the court to prove that the oath was tendered to me at the last assizes, according to the indictment. Come, come, said the judge, it was not done in a corner. Then he asked me what I had to say to it, or whether I had taken the oath at the last assize. I told him what I had formerly said to them, as it now came to my remembrance. Thereupon the judge said, I will not dispute with you, but in point of law. Then said he, I have something to speak to the jury concerning the indictment. He told me I must not speak to the jury, but if I had anything to say, I must speak to him. I asked him whether the oath was to be tendered to the king's subjects only, or to the subjects of foreign princes. He replied, to the subjects of this realm. Then said I, look in the indictment, and thou mayest see the word subject is left out of this indictment also. Therefore, seeing the oath is not to be tendered to any but the subjects of this realm, and ye have not put me in as a subject, the court is to take no notice of this indictment. I had no sooner spoken thus than the judge cried, take him away, jailer, take him away. So I was presently hurried away. The jailer and people expected that I should be called for again, but I was never brought to the court any more, though I had many other great errors to assign in the indictment. After I was gone, the judge asked the jury if they were agreed. They said yes, and found for the king against me, as I was told. But I was never called to hear sentence given, nor was any given against me that I could hear of. I understood that when they had looked more narrowly into the indictment, they saw it was not good. And the judge, having sworn the officers of the court that the oath was tendered me at the assize before such a day as was set forth in the indictment, and that being the wrong day, I should have proved the officers of the court for sworn men again, had the judge suffered me to plead to the indictment, which was thought to be the reason he hurried me away so soon. The judge had passed sentence of Freymanier upon Margaret Fell before I was brought in, and it seems that when I was hurried away, they recorded me as a premuniered person, though I was never brought to hear the sentence or knew of it, which was very illegal. Footnote 180. A premuniered person is one who has incurred the penalty of being put out of the protection of the crown and having his lands, goods, and chattels forfeited to the crown and of remaining in prison during the sovereign's pleasure. For they should not only have had me present to hear the sentence given, but should also have asked me first what I could say why sentence should not be given against me. But they knew I had so much to say that they could not give sentence if they heard it. While I was prisoner in Lancaster Castle, there was a great noise and talk of the Turks overspreading Christendom, and great fears entered many. But one day, as I was walking in my prison chamber, I saw the Lord's power turn against him, and that he was turning back again. And I declared to some what the Lord had let me see, when there were such fears of his overrunning Christendom. And within a month after, the news came that they had given him a defeat. Another time, as I was walking in my chamber with my eye to the Lord, I saw the angel of the Lord with a glittering drawn sword stretched southward, as though the court had been all on fire. Not long after the wars broke out with Holland, the sickness broke forth, and afterwards the fire of London, so the Lord's sword was drawn indeed. By reason of my long and close imprisonment in so bad a place, I was become very weak in body, but the Lord's power was over all, supported me through all, and enabled me to do service for him, and for his truth and people, as the place would admit. For while I was in Lancaster prison, I answered several books, as the Mass, the Common Prayer, the Directory, and the Church Faith, which are the four chief religions that are got up since the Apostles' Day. Footnote 181. These four chief religions which have been got up since the Apostles' Day are respectively the Roman Catholic, the Episcopalian, Presbyterian, and Independent, i.e. Congregational. Chapter 16. A Year in Scarborough Castle. 1665-1666. After the assize, Colonel Kirby and other justices were very uneasy with my being at Lancaster, for I had galled them sore at my trials there, and they labored much to get me removed thence to some remote place. Colonel Kirby sometimes threatened that I should be sent beyond sea. About 6 weeks after the assizes, they got an order from the King and Council to remove me from Lancaster, and with it they brought a letter from the Earl of Anglesey, wherein it was written that if those things with which I was charged were found true against me, I deserved no clemency nor mercy. Yet the greatest matter they had against me was because I could not disobey the command of Christ and swear. When they had prepared for my removal, the under-sheriff and the head sheriff's man, with some bailiffs, fetched me out of the castle, when I was so weak with lying in that cold, wet, and smoky prison that I could hardly go or stand. They led me into the jailer's house, where were William Kirby and several others, and they called for wine to give me. I told them I would have none of their wine. Then they cried, "Bring out the horses." I desired them first to show me their order or copy of it if they intended to remove me, but they would show me none but their swords. I told them there was no sentence passed upon me, nor was I premanured that I knew of, and therefore I was not made the king's prisoner, but was the sheriff's, for they and all the country knew that I was not fully heard at the last assize, nor suffered to show the errors in the indictment, which were sufficient to squash it, though they had kept me from one assize to another to the end they might try me. but they all knew there was no sentence of premature passed upon me. Therefore I, not being the king's prisoner, but the sheriff's, did desire to see their order. Instead of showing me their order, they haled me out and lifted me upon one of the sheriff's horses. When I was on horseback in the street, the townspeople being gathered to gaze upon me, I told the officers I had received neither Christianity, civility, nor humanity from them. They hurried me away about 14 miles to Bentham, though I was so weak that I was hardly able to sit on horseback, and my clothes smelt so of smoke they were loathsome to myself. The wicked jailer, one Hunter, a young fellow, would come behind and give the horse a lash with his whip, and make him skip and leap, so that I, being weak, had much ado to sit on him. Then he would come and look me in the face and say, "How do you, Mr. Fox?" I told him it was not civil in him to do so. The Lord cut him off soon after. When we were come to Bentham in Yorkshire, there met us many troopers and a marshal, and many of the gentry of the country were come in, and abundance of people to take a view of me. I, being very weak and weary, desired them to let me lie down on a bed, which the soldiers permitted. For those that brought me thither gave their order to the marshal, and he set a guard of his soldiers upon me. When they had stayed a while, they pressed horses, raised the bailiff of the hundred, the constables and others, and bore me to Giggleswick that night. But indeed, weak I was. There, with their clogged shoes, they raised the constables, who sat drinking all the night in the room by me, so that I could not get much rest. The next day we came to Market Town, where several friends came to see me. Robert Witters and divers friends came to me upon the road. The next night I asked the soldiers whither they intended to carry me, and whither I was to be sent. Some of them said, "Beyond sea." Others said, "To Tynemouth Castle." A great fear there was amongst them lest someone should rescue me out of their hands, but the fear was needless. Next night we came to York, where the marshal put me into a great chamber, where most part of two troops came to see me. One of these troopers, an envious man, hearing that I was premanured, asked me what estate I had and whether it was copyhold or freeland. I took no notice of his question, but was moved to declare the word of life to the soldiers, and many of them were very loving. At night, the Lord Fretchville, so called, who commanded these horse, came to me and was very civil and loving. I gave him an account of my imprisonment, and declared many things to him relating to truth. They kept me at York 2 days, and then the marshal and 4 or 5 soldiers were sent to convey me to Scarborough Castle. These were very civil men, and they carried themselves civilly and lovingly to me. On the way we baited at Malton, and they permitted friends to come and visit me. When we were come to Scarborough, they took me to an inn and gave notice to the governor, who sent 6 soldiers to be my guard that night. Next day they conducted me into the castle, put me into a room, and set a sentry on me. As I was very weak and subject to fainting, they sometimes let me go out into the air with the sentry. They soon removed me out of this room and put me into an open one, where the rain came in, and which was exceedingly thick with smoke, which was very offensive to me. Footnote 182. Scarborough Castle is so nearly demolished that it is now impossible to locate the rooms in which Fox was confined. The room in which he was finally quartered was on the extreme seaside of the castle and has been entirely destroyed. This year of fearful imprisonment following the severe confinement at Lancaster nearly broke down his wonderful constitution. He never again had the same physical vigor and power. Note his healthy humor in the little joke with the papist. One day the governor, Sir John Crossland, came to see me, and brought with him Sir Francis Cobb. I desired the governor to go into my room and see what a place I had,